as he is affectionately called, requested for the shelter of His Holiness Rompad Swami in 2002. He was first and second initiated in Vrindavan and St. Louis, respectively. Vrindavan 2004, he was got the initiation, first initiation, and St. Louis 2007. And while he was raising his daughter, and he got a degree in architecture. He was an architectural engineer, and he spent some time working for an architectural company, designing buildings and so on and so forth, churches within Kansas, Missouri, and Illinois. And then he did some major renovation work for St. Louis Temple. And then he quit his job, and then he became a vanprast. And at that time, it says he began his Bhakti Shastri studies at Radha Desh. So must be 2005. Okay. And so Maharaj writes that upon quitting his day job as an architect, Rupa Sanatan Swami Prabhu took up vanprastha status and began his Bhakti Shastri studies at Radha Desh as directed by his spiritual master. But before he could complete it, Rompad Swami called him to go to St. Louis to run the temple there, and which he did. And he became temple president in 2005, and he remained in his position till 2012, all during this disease and everything else. Very, very powerful, very empowered. You know, I've heard a lot about him. And so he was diagnosed with life-changing bladder cancer at the end of 2010. And as a temple president of St. Louis, he was a tremendous asset and did tireless service. He was very successful in organizing festivals. He actually conducted the first Rath Yatra for the St. Louis area. And then he successfully ran the Govinda's restaurant there. Plus he did lunchtime delivery. He had sort of a catering business that he did. And preaching was his life. He planned and executed the weekly Krishna Fest programs. In addition, he spearheaded organization of public festivals. This is Gaur Purnima, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, Rath Yatra, appearance and disappearance days. He would constantly take a group out for Harinam every Friday evening, offer Bhagavad Gita classes, and organize monthly programs in Indianapolis, which is another major city next to St. Louis. He was often invited to present Krishna consciousness at St. Louis University, Krishna Brothers College High School, and other schools and colleges in St. Louis area. St. Louis always had a shortage of devotees. I think it's almost every place. And one thing that I saw is that how just one devotee, you know, he could do so much. And really, I'd heard from Ganpati Swami, Roma Swami, that he was almost singularly running the whole temple. I mean, nobody could guess on the outside that, you know, all the activities of the St. Louis temple were just done by like one person. And then upon being diagnosed with cancer, he had surgeries for over 2 years. Each successful surgery was successful, but then follow-up tests will show that tumors have, you know, gone elsewhere. And then last October, they found that his cancer has spread to liver. Once it goes into liver, then it's really not too much can be done. Here, somebody wrote, Rupa Sanatan Prabhu was a true example of faith, dedication, determination, enthusiasm, love and strength. I'm forever grateful to the mercy of Sri Krishna for allowing association with the real Mahatma, a great soul. He enriched the lives of all who came in contact with him, leaving the impression of his ever-present smile and generous laugh upon one's heart. So, evidence of this was when I was chanting beside his bed, when medications no longer allowed him to chant on his beads, I witnessed the movement of his lips as he lay there, forming the words of Maha Mantra, even though he made no sound. When I told him that this, a smile came to his face, something that he did little as his pain increased. It seemed a comfort to him, learning that he indeed was chanting. This kind of dedication is an inspiration like no other. Over the 7 years he was president, he did some amazing service, and even though managing the temple was a difficult task with only a few devotees at hand, still he remained very positive and enlightened. Certainly, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram and Nitai Gaur Nataraj have recognized his service. It is fitting and wonderful that he is presently in Vrindavan, and he passed his body there. So let's pray to Lord Narasimhadev that Rupasanathan Prabhu goes, he is in Vaikuntha, and or wherever Srila Prabhupada wants to serve. Srila Rupasanathan Prabhu ki jai. So with that, so let's talk about Bhakti Siddhanta Sarathaka Maharaj. So I believe this is his 139th appearance day. Bhakti Siddhanta Swami Maharaj, he appeared on February 6, 1874 in Jagannath Puri, and he was the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we all know the story of how when the Rath Yatra took place in Jagannath Puri that year, the Rath of Lord Jagannath went in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house and didn't move for 3 days, I believe. It just didn't move. And they finally realized that Jagannath wanted something. And then Bhaktivinoda Maharaj's mother then brought out the little baby. Let's see, this is generally in June or March, about 4 months old. And as soon as little Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was brought out, a garland fell from Lord Jagannath's on his body. And then they knew it was something special. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was named Bimal Prasad, Bimla Prasad, Bimla Prasad. And so she is the internal potency of Lord Jagannath. So the indication was from day one that he was someone very, very special. And Rupalas Prabhu, when he wrote his biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he titled him The Ray of Vishnu. So he was really empowered. We can see that from day one. What I thought was, I will focus on, or I kind of named, or sort of the lecture, Mission Impossible. And Bhaktisiddhanta Swarasi Thakur Maharaj did amazing things. He did for Krishna, for Lord Chaitanya, things that were sort of impossible to even think of. And so one of the biggest things that he did, as Prabhupada writes, and I'll read this from Prabhupada's writing, 101 years ago, this is a sort of lecture Prabhupada gave in 1975, on Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's appearance day, some excerpts from it. 101 years ago, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared on this day. Bhaktisiddhanta is Gaura Shakti. So he is the personification of the potency of Lord Chaitanya. Gaura Shakti means empowered. Empowered by Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted his mission to be broadcast all over the world. He desired Prithvyate Ache Yate Nagaradi Gram Sarvata Prachare Haibe Moranam. Prithvi, all over the world. As many towns and villages as there are. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that his mission will be spread. This prediction was made by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally 500 years ago. My Guru Maharaj attempted to fulfill the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes in the year 1918, he was Brahmachari and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, his material father, he wanted, so Prabhupada is saying that actually Bhakti Vinod Thakur's desire was also to spread this movement throughout the world. And we can see that he wrote that small book, The Precepts and Life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that was in 1896. And then the book was sent to Canada. There's a copy in McGill University. And he especially very much desired that foreigners, especially Americans, would join this movement. And this was the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in 1896. And if you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's sort of biography and Bhaktisat Maharaj Thakur's biography, you'll see that Bhaktisat Maharaj understood his father's life very well. In fact, I was trying to find the Bhaktisat Vaibhav book that Bhakti Vikas Maharaj wrote, and I couldn't find it. I didn't realize that today was the appearance date till last night. Everything was closed. And in fact, I woke up Dindyal Prabhu this morning on Skype saying, do you have the book? Anyway, but I remember from that book that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as he was leaving his body, was passing away, he specifically charged Bhaktisat Thakur Maharaj in fulfilling his desires of publishing, of spreading the movement. And so Bhaktisat Thakur Maharaj did something that was impossible. And one thing that practically what it meant, I was thinking about it, was that he really started the process of making mlechas into Brahmins. He sent his disciples to England. I believe it was Bon Maharaj. And Prabhupada writes here, one of my godbrothers, he went to London and he had the opportunity to talk with one big man, Marquis of Zetland. Marquis of Zetland was formerly governor of Bengal. At that time I was a student. He was a Scotsman and I was a student of the Scottish Church's College. So he came to see our college and he was standing in front of me in the second year class. He was a very nice, good gentleman. So his proposal to my godbrother, so this is now, but this happened in England, London, that Zetland asked Bhaktisat Maharaj's disciple, can you make me a Brahmin? My godbrother proposed, yes, we can make anyone Brahmin, provided you follow these principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. That Lord Zetland immediately replied, impossible. Impossible. But that's exactly what Bhaktisat Maharaj did, and really to implement his desires, we have our Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada exactly did that. All of us are mlechas, and Prabhupada, that was one of the miracles. And Prabhupada always gave credit to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, that it was his Guru Maharaj who was present with him. Prabhupada said, I never feel lonely. I always feel the presence of my Guru Maharaj. He felt the empowerment from Bhaktisat Thakur Maharaj to do this sort of mission impossible. Nobody could even think of what to speak of converting them to Brahmins, but even going to West, that for sannyasis in that day and age, to cross the ocean meant that you were automatically sort of excommunicated because you could not keep the vows of sannyas, of so on and so forth. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj practically showed, demonstrated, and then Srila Prabhupada took it even further. And so here's Prabhupada writes again, during my Guru Maharaj's time, even a person was coming from a Brahmin family, he was initiated according to the Pancharatrika system, taking to be Shudra. So the birthright Brahminism is not applicable at the present moment. The sacred thread inaugurated by my Guru Maharaj according to the Pancharatrika system and Bhakti and Hari Bhakti Vilas by Srila Sanatan Goswami must continue. It does not matter whether the priestly class accepts it or not. When my Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, introduced the system, it was protested even by the inner circle of God brothers or friends. Of course, he had actually no God brothers, but there were many disciples of Bhaktivinoda Thakur who were considered as God brothers, who protested against this action of my Guru Maharaj, but he didn't take care of it. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was a very, very strong personality. As you know, he was called the Simha Guru, the Lion Guru. And Prabhupada writes somewhere else that I think I have down below that he was famous for his chopping techniques, as the name suggests, Siddhanta. He spent in his lifetime upholding the Vaishnava Siddhantas. As we know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur started that uprooting all the Sahajism and all the up Siddhantas. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Maharaj continued that tradition. He would literally roar in front of the Mayavadis, in terms of Sahajavadis. And it is said that when he would walk on the street, right, and if a Mayavadi or a Sahaja would see him, they would actually cross the street and not face him. They're just so afraid of him. And anyway, so Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did sort of unheard things, impossible things, taking the Shudras in India. Everyone is a Shudra now, and you know, in this Kali Yuga, and Srila Prabhupada went overseas and took all the Mlechas. And through proper training, through Harinam, through Mahamantra, made them Brahmins. And there was a lot of protest, there was a lot of anger expressed, but they didn't care. And they succeeded. So that is one other impossible thing that he did. Here Prabhupada writes, so I was thinking, I will propose something that is impossible. Anyway, let me try. Now, by the grace of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the presence of my Guru Maharaj, you are so nice, boys and girls. In front of my Guru Maharaj, you are chanting Hare Krishna mantra, and you are taking part in it very seriously. My Guru Maharaj will be very, very pleased upon you and bless you with all the benefits. He wanted this, and it is not that he is dead and gone. That is not the spiritual understanding. Even ordinary living beings, he does not die. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. What to speak of such exalted, authorized persons like Bhakti Siddhant? He is seeing. I never feel that I am alone. One, the other thing that Bhakti Siddhant did, Maharaj did, was generally, again, if you see in the Indian setting, we find many sannyasis, really, they go out to the villages and they are preaching to the village folks. Bhaktisiddhanta was probably one of the first ones who sort of expressly who made an effort, who preached to the very well-educated, to the higher-ups. he practically showed that, you know, what Krishna says in chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, 21, yajat asra shrestas, that whatever the educated, whatever the elite will do, common men will follow. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did. In fact, I was reading portions of the biography that some of the sort of elite in India at that time, who were with sort of the British, was following British ways, they would say, why don't you go to the villages? Why don't you preach over there? What are you doing over here? They would openly sort of challenge him, tell him that. But Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj knew that if he could influence the kings and the king makers, then that will, the common will follow. And it is the same thing that Srila Prabhupada did. Prabhupada would go out of his way, would ask devotees to schedule appointments, to have him meet the professors, the cardinals, the bishops, the upper level. Prabhupada made a big effort to see Indira Gandhi, the Prime Minister at that time, you know, Lal Bahadur Shastri. He would write to Gandhi, you know, the presidents. And so, again, that is sort of our tradition. As I travel, I know many times I hear people say, well, it seems like ISKCON is always going after the rich, after that. And it's not that we are after their money, it's that if we can convert them, then the others will follow them. And so, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. So that was something that was special, something that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did. One other thing that he was severely criticized for it, but again Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj never cared for it, was that he was probably one of the first sannyasis who, for preaching purposes, took material dress. I don't know if you've seen his picture, but he has his picture in a very sort of Englishman overcoat. He wore shoes and socks, and then he asked his disciples to do the same thing for the sake of preaching. That is the focus. For the sake of preaching, he said, even the material things become spiritual. And we see the analogy that he says a microphone is a very material thing, but when it is used for speaking on Bhagavatam, for speaking on Krishna, then that is spiritual. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, again, he was severely criticized for doing this, but he says, no, when I'm moving amongst kings, and he had but Maharaj of Tripura and Manipur were Vaishnavas, they followed him. He was there. And so unlike Gandhi, who when he went to the assembly of King George, and he had a purpose too, when you go and have an audience with the king, you're supposed to wear, you know, the tux and everything else. And Gandhi said, I will not, I'm just going to wear a loincloth. In some ways, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was the opposite. He wore, in some ways, the dress of the person who was seeing, so that at least that gets out of the way. Otherwise, people are just staring, you know, I'm talking to him, I'm, you know, a person who's in a loincloth, does he understand me? You know, what can he do? And so he would get that out of the way, and then as an equal, he could really hit them hard. So that was, again, something that was sort of very, very special about Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Maharaj. That and we see that the Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj has so many disciples. Srila Prabhupada was one disciple that could really understand the mood of his Guru Maharaj. And as you read, if you have not read the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav by Bhaktivikas Maharaj, I've read only the first volume, you can see almost everything that Srila Prabhupada did was based on the actions and teachings and the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. There's so many things that that we find that Srila Prabhupada does that sort of have no reference if you don't know that. But then as you research, as you go into the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you see that Srila Prabhupada did that. And that's why Prabhupada was so much empowered, is because he followed his Guru Maharaj. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did the same thing. One thing that Bhaktivikas Maharaj does develop in his book is the fact that how Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj understood his father, and he followed his father, not just as a son to follows the father, but even beyond that, that he understood the mood and the desires of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, and he took upon himself one thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressly put charge to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was to publish books for the printing press. The idea that came from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj again embellished it, increased it further. And even in, I believe in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own lifetime, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj took to the editing and writing of the harmonists and Sajjan Toshni as Bhaktivinoda Thakur got, you know, was unwell and didn't do that. And so, you see Prabhupada's writing, all the books he wrote, comes from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, if you take a look at it, at one time he was not only publishing Harmonist and Sajjan Toshni, these are like magazines, but with all the different translations. There was a magazine in Assamese, in Bengali, in Uriya. Now obviously he had help, but again it was under his supervision. All these things were going on. He opened 64 mutts throughout India. The books, the lectures, his constant travels among the highest level society. And he did all that, and Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, he followed him exactly to the dot, to the point that he did the same thing of the writing and preaching, so on and so forth. So that is something that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he continued the tradition of publishing, of spreading, and through the printing press. So the Brihad Mridanga, in fact Prabhupada writes that in Krishna book, that he learned the Sankirtan, that his father taught him everything else except one thing, and that was Sankirtan, that was taught by Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, there is a quote here, I think all of you know. Where is that? He said, even at the expense of all properties, temples, and mutt that I have, if I could convert even one person into a pure devotee, my mission would be fulfilled. And we find Srila Prabhupada saying exactly the same thing, that I would consider my life, my preaching to be successful if I made just one pure devotee. So let me... Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was a great scholar. He was always meditating on the Siddhant. What was the Siddhant behind something, and he was very, very true to the to that. So here's what I thought. I will read some excerpts, okay, of his writings. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Just 1 second. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. No wonder. Okay, sorry. There you go. The only duty of sadhus is to cut away all the accumulated wicked propensities of every individual. This alone is the causeless natural desire of all the sadhus. Worldly people possess a double nature. They express one kind of sentiment, but internally cherish a different purpose. Moreover, they want to advertise this duplicity as a mark of liberalism or love of harmony. Those who are unwilling to show any duplicity wish to be frank and straightforward, or in other words, to exercise unambiguously the functions of the soul. Such really sincere persons are called sectarian and orthodox by those who practice duplicity. We will cultivate the society only of those who are straightforward. We will not keep company with any person who is not so. We must by all means avoid bad company. We are advised to keep at a distance of 100 cubits from animals of the horned species. We should observe the same caution in regard to all insincere persons. So, it is for this reason that the Bhagavat instructs us to turn over a new leaf. Persons of good sense must entirely give up all association with bad company and cultivate close association with sadhus. There is no doubt that the words of the sadhu possess the powers of destroying the evil propensities of one's mind. The sadhus in this way benefit everyone who associates with them. There are many things which we do not disclose to sadhu. The real sadhu makes us speak out what we keep concealed in our hearts. He then applies the knife. The very word sadhu has no other meaning than this. He stands in front of the block with the uplifted sacrificial knife in his hand. The sensuous desires of man are like goats. The sadhu stands there to kill those desires, but the merciful stroke of the keen edge of the sacrificial knife in the form of unpleasant language. If the sadhu turns into my flatterer, then he does me harm. He becomes my enemy. If he gives us flattery, then we are led to the roads that bring enjoyment but not real well-being. And one thing I was thinking is something that many academicians and others criticize Prabhupada is for using the word like hogs and dogs and asses and jackals. Prabhupada uses that. And that is actually coming from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. He did not mince any words. I mean, the Shastras, you know, Bhagavatam does talk the word khara, which is an ass. But they didn't look at, well, this is a nice company, you know, maybe let me use something. And that's what this chopping knife, he just says as it is, even if it's unpleasant. And that's something else that is sort of in our tradition. And we devotees have gone to do that, and at least I'm reminded, okay, you know, Prabhupada can do that, we cannot. But you see that if it's done with sincerity, without duplicity, in a straightforward manner, people will take it. And Prabhupada used to say those words, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj used to say those words. They had the capacity as being the genuine sadhi to bring out that concealed, what you call, wickedness that we have inside. And they could just chop it off. And that's how they were able to do so much they could. They were the real sadhus. And I guess on this appearance day, we really should take shelter and ask for the mercy that, if nothing else, if we can just maybe chant our rounds nicely and do some Harinam, do some Sankirtan, and maybe pass on this legacy to all the people around. So I'm going to stop here. Does anyone else have any comments on, I mean, there's so much on him, and I obviously, you know, we can speak so much, and I'm very much limited in my mind. So I'll open it up to if someone else wants to talk about Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Yes. Yeah. They're both, I've always wondered, and I've come to the conclusion that why was Srila Prabhupada so successful compared to his godbrothers? And the reason was that he understood his Guru Maharaj, and his Guru Maharaj also, that they were experts on applying the Shastras according to time, place, and circumstance. That was the, I think, one of the sort of key success factors in their preaching. Time, place, and circumstance. Based on time, place, circumstance, we see Prabhupada coming to the West and doing so many things. They did not compromise. That would be a wrong word to use. They did not compromise. They adjusted. There's a big difference, and we have to give according to time, place, and like Mahindra Prabhu was saying, same thing, according to time, place, circumstance. They didn't compromise with the scriptures, because scripture says, ultimately, the soul has no gender. And time, place, circumstance, and you can see how that has helped us. Can you imagine ISKCON temples without Mataji's doing deity worship, all those things? I mean, they can see that it's the same thing, like I say, is, what was so unique about Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj that in the throes of India's independence, where everything was, we were trying to be Indian, this and that, he asked Srila Prabhupada to preach in English. I mean, just think that one instruction. I mean, according to time, place, circumstance, and the vision that they had, this is the true vision, that in the future, everyone would be embracing the English language. I mean, I'm here in the French country and Dutch country, but you yourselves can see how English is permeating. And they could see that. And unlike the others that, let everything be in Latin or Sanskrit, they did not really undo the Sanskrit. Our prayers are still in Sanskrit, but their meanings, Prabhupada's, why his writing was so successful, is that he used modern examples. He didn't change the Sanskrit. He didn't change the meaning. Just to explain it, he used modern analogies. And that's why, that's something, and I'm glad it's coming out, is that the vision of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, see that, it was not antiquated. Even though it was the very ancient tradition, but it was repackaged so that all of us could understand that. And same thing like now, Bhakti Samaj is on record saying that, okay, preach in English, but he also says, and I have that quote here, I picked it out, he said, on the other hand, he said, once people, devotees and people appreciate Chaitanya Charitamrita, they themselves will want to learn Bengali to appreciate CC even more. So it's not that they were after English or Bengali or Sanskrit, but whatever it took, time, place, circumstance, to use that as a vehicle. And so, and it's true, I mean, I personally, as I can say, I mean, I have this ardent desire to really learn Sanskrit and Bengali. Only after I understood in English what Prabhupada and the Acharyas wrote. And I think, I'm sure many of you have the same desire. I mean, Radhika, he teaches Sanskrit, he says, everyone is dying, it's like, you know, in the devotee circles, to really know, understand a little bit of Sanskrit, so they can appreciate, they can you know, the sound vibration, to understand, to look at its sweetness and its transcendentalness. So, you know, that is very, very true. Their vision was not very short term, and so giving the Gayatri Mantra, and Prabhupada adjusted it. He didn't give women the thread, but he gave the Gayatri Mantra. Now that is a, you know, again, you can see the principle was to really the Gayatri Mantra. The thread is more a ritualistic thing. And actually here it is said, this thing about thread, that that was to satisfy the present-day Brahmins, that the Brahmins need to have a thread. But really, you see, Bhakti Maharaj and Prabhupada saying that this is like a one-cent thread. It has no meaning. But the real thing was he gave us the Mahamantra and the Gayatri Mantra. How you do it, with or without the thread, is not really that important. And so that was the sort of the beauty is the wrong word, I guess. That was the sort of the greatness of our parampara, especially Bhaktisiddha Maharaj. Bhaktivinoda Thakur allowed women to do Namhatta. But then he said, they will not mix. And that's where the tradition is coming from, that the Matajis and the Prabhus, they go together for Harinam. But I especially heard that the Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, okay, that they can go in two parties, but they will not mix. So they adjusted, the times called for women out on the streets, yes, you can do Harinam, but you will not mix. And so it is, you know, a tradition that has withered the test of time. Okay. Anything else? Yes, please. Yep. You were answered, Maharaj? Yes, yes, I heard. Go ahead, yeah, tell. Yes, in fact, Ravindra Maharaj did the research, and this came out of the Mayapur. He said many of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Maharaj's writings were edited by an English professor, Dr. Sanyal, who took initiation from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and he kind of understood the mind of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj writes, uses a lot of words, the president of society, and this and that. And only in the very later stage, there's only one instance, like in 1926, something like that, that he found the first time the word founder acharya was used, just only in one writing. And that is the origin of that. And I believe he says it is, and he thought, I think if I'm not wrong, that Dr. Sanyal was the one who took that word. I guess I don't know if it's like Bengali writing from which he took that, and so yeah, that's very true. But the interesting thing is, when I read the Bhaktisiddhanta Weber, like I went through the same thing, that everything that Prabhupada did was based on what Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj had done or was planning to do. Everything that, I mean, and there's some other similarities. One thing that came to mind is when Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away, if I'm not wrong, please correct me if not, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was really overwhelmed. He missed his father so much. He loved him. He knew that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like seventh Goswami and all that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had left him all this charge to do publishing, to take over Sajjan Toshni, to do the Vaishnava Rajya Sabha, so on and so forth. Things. And he just felt overwhelmed, and it's almost like he felt into like a depression. And at that time, he gets a dream with all the acharyas around him, telling him, and I think it was his own Guru Maharaj, Uttam Thakur, saying, go ahead and we will make sure that everything goes right. We find a similar dream that Prabhupada has. I mean, there's so much similarity between the guru and the disciple that it is, at least when I read that, I was like getting goosebumps, that they're very, very similar. You read that first part of the first volume, and you see Prabhupada goes through the same experiences as Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. He is also prodded by the parampara and the dasavatars, saying, okay, we will row the boat, we just do it. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj had the same experience like that. And so that's why I think it is so special, this relationship that Srila Prabhupada had with Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. It's really amazing. And why Prabhupada says, and you can see Prabhupada is so genuine, that all the credit goes to my Guru Maharaj. The credit of Srila Prabhupada is that he was able to understand the will of his Guru Maharaj and execute it. So Prabhupada does get credit, but I'm saying when Prabhupada says that I didn't do anything, it was my Guru Maharaj, in some ways he's very correct. It was not like superfluous humility. We all say, well, no, I'm nothing, you know, it's my Guru Maharaj, you know. And we have learned to use that, and eventually we will get like that humble, but I'm saying there's also a sense of truth in it. And not in the bad sense. Prabhupada himself was, you know, he is the embodiment of Lord Nitya's mercy. You know, he gave that. But you see this very intimate relationship, understanding between Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and our Srila Prabhupada. Very good. Anyone else? Mataji is here? Okay. So at noon, we will gather here again and have a Pushpanjali for Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and then we'll have the feast. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samvet Bhaktivinoda ki.